Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and I'm glad you could be with us today. One issue that sometimes people ask me about, and I've never had a good enough expert that I could find who could talk to us about it, is the phenomenon of psychic detective work. So when Wendy Zammit let me know about Australia's wonderful psychic detective and her new book, I was delighted to reach out to her. Sydney-based Debbie Malone was the 2013 Australian Psychic of the Year, and she bills herself as Australia's number one psychic detective. All of that, of course, well-deserved. She is an acclaimed and highly respected psychic, clairvoyant, psychometry expert and spirit medium. And frankly, she's had six amazing near-death experiences, which probably are the source of some of her gifts. We're going to get into that. Some of the work that Debbie has done is frankly astounding, and I love it when I can learn new things. And she documents many of the highlights of her work in her intense new book, which is called Clues from the Beyond. I've just finished reading it literally within the last half hour. And of course, any information that purports to come from the victim of an accident or a murder that reveals important information that could not have been known otherwise, wow. That is very powerful evidence, isn't it, that the dead survive? And she's done this a number of times. And think about the parents, think about the children, think about the relatives and loved ones of people who have been lost and just can't be found. The comfort of knowing what's finally happened to them, getting closure on that, and being able to hear directly from them through Debbie that they're okay. There's nothing that can put a price on that. So she's doing really wonderful work. We're thrilled to have Debbie here today, all the way from Australia. Debbie Malone, welcome. I'm so glad you're here.
Hi, Roberta. Lovely to speak to you this morning. Oh, it's this evening in your...
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes, that's fine. That's one of the things I love about talking to Australia. It's always, the world's always turned around completely, and it's very early in the morning for her. And when we're speaking here, of course, it's late in the afternoon. But please start, Debbie, just by telling us, what is psychic detective work from your perspective?
I'm called in by the police to work on cases, so they might just say they've got a case that they want me to come into the station with. I usually don't know anything about it. And then I'll work with items like a piece of jewellery or maybe a photograph. Usually the jewellery I do first. So that's what the psychometry is. So I'll tune into the jewellery, and from holding that I can become the victim, so I can see it through their eyes. I can actually be the murderer and see it through his or her eyes. I can feel their pain. It's like I'm a witness at times. I'm watching what happens. I hear them, see them, feel them. You can feel their pain, unfortunately, but then that also helps me to describe to the police what happens. I'll smell things, see things. I get little visions at times. It's like watching little TV screens of little snippets of their life or their last moments.
Wow, that's incredible, isn't it? Explain to people what psychometry is, because many people, I don't think, have even not even heard the term.
Yes, the word psychometry comes from a Greek word meaning soul measuring. So what happens when we wear an item, our part of our soul is actually imprinted into that item, or our energy. So if I hold a piece of jewelry like a ring or a watch or something like that, part of that person's energy will be imprinted into that. And it's sort of like that's how I connect with them.
Does it stay there forever? I mean, is it like if it was someone who was murdered 100 years ago and someone gave you, a hair comb she had worn all the time, would you be able to still pick up that energy, or does it fade over time?
No, it would still be there. And I think sometimes, you know, if people buy antique items and they might have worn it, but then the previous person, when I'm tuning in, sometimes I sort of get what I call layering. So I might get the previous owners as well as the current owner. So you get sort of little snippets, but with clothing, I mean, it does fade because it's washed. It does sort of fade back, and it depends how many people have handled it. So if there's been a lot of people touching it.
I mean, I've heard of this, and I know something about it, but I'm fascinated by it nonetheless. So if something that they had just owned and left at home, and it's not associated with a murder, you'd only sort of pick up the way they were before that event, right? But if it's something that they wore during the murder, would you be able to pick up elements of that, maybe their fear or whatever, from the piece of jewelry?
Well, you can do it both ways. A lot of the time I will be given items that they didn't wear at the time of the murder, and I can still tune in that way. But, yes, if it's more significant if it's actually something they've been wearing. But a lot of the time I work on cold cases, so they're cases where there isn't any evidence of the person, so I don't actually always get to hold something that they were wearing at the time of the murder.
Let's talk about your near-death experiences. Were you psychic before you had those experiences?
No, I don't know. I've had my first one at 3. But I found out later on in life after my grandmother died that she was very psychic, and she used to, her and my great aunt used to have flower readings in the 1940s in Tasmania, which is quite an odd thing way back then because nobody really went to the spiritualist church then. So, yeah, right. It was interesting. Yes.
So this is something interesting. It appears that psychic ability is very much passed down through heredity. So you had it in your background, but you had 6 near-death experiences. What caused them?
When I was 3, I had runical pneumonia, and I almost passed from that. Then at 13, I had my appendix out, and I've now since discovered that when I have anaesthetics, that's what brings on the near-death experiences. So at 13, my heart stopped, and I remember floating in the room above my bed and watching the doctors trying to revive me, and it was like up and down. So I was floating on water, and then I woke up in the morning, and they said to me, "Oh, did you know your heart stopped?" And I said, "No," but I told them that I was, you know, in the corner of the room watching them. Then I had another 4 in my late 20s, early 30s, because I've had a lot of illness in my life, so I've had to have a lot of anaesthetics, and the most major one was 25 years ago, and I had to have a major operation, and I knew that I was going to die, so I actually got a will made the night before. When I said to the doctors that I felt something wrong, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. all right, so you're past that, let's hope, and you're into this very productive part of your life. How did you get started doing detective work?
Well, initially I tried everything not to do anything with it, but there was a it was a great big case over here called the Backpacker Murders. There was a lot of international backpackers that went missing, and that was a very big thing on our news over here because he was, you know, a big major serial killer. And at first I thought that I was just watching too much television because it was blasted all over the news and radio and television, and I started to dream about it. But then after watching it, I ended up knowing things before it was on the news. And I used to work for a local newspaper at the time, and I spoke to one of the journalists there and started to tell him what I was seeing. And from that point onwards, I had some friends who, one of them, her husband was a police officer. So once I started to get this information before it was on the news, and then they'd find where bodies were or things would happen. So then I was put in contact with the head of the task force, and I started working with the police that way.
When was this?
It was about 25 years ago. I'm just trying to think. Yeah, I had a miscarriage. So my son was born in 1990. Then I had a miscarriage. And so around 1992, this started to happen.
Wow, that is a long time ago. How many people were killed?
I think there's about 7, but there's still a lot that are missing that they feel are linked to this murderer, but they have not yet been found.
Oh my goodness! Do they know who did this?
Yes, they do.
Have they ever found the murderers? Okay.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I believe he didn't act alone. I feel that he worked with other people, but it was quite frightening at the time because I worked for the newspaper. They did a story about me and gave me a fake name, but his girlfriend ended up contacting the paper and wanted to speak.
Oh,
which is quite frightening.
Yes, that's terrifying. Well, thank you for doing this work, even though you have some personal risk in it. My goodness. And what was interesting to me was these were mostly, at least in this book that has just come out, these are mostly people who went missing. And in some cases, the victims contacted you, which I find really interesting. Is that what typically happens, or is it mostly that you're called by the detectives and you come and try to see if you can find the person?
I try to only do it that way now because through safety issues, because I have had people come after me because of the work I do. And, you know, it's hard in some cases. People come seeking their lost loved one when actually they were the murderer. So you've got to be very careful.
My goodness. I'm sorry. Okay, yeah, and the police tend not to have that kind of frame of mind. So in most cases, these people seem to be around. They've transitioned, right? And they're just anxious to give their families closure. Is that pretty much what's going on?
Yeah, I do believe that, because I find a lot of the time, they sort of say, that when people haven't been found, that they haven't gone to the light and they're earthbound. But I do feel that they are very conscious of their surroundings and what's happened, and yes, they do seem to bring messages through to their families about happy things, not always just sad and horrible, horrific circumstances. So their consciousness still lives on.
That's my conclusion too, and I think that's an important point to make. These people that Debbie's contacting are very, very with it. I was surprised at how interested they were, especially a few of them, the fellow with the sailboat, for example, in getting their murderers caught, solving the crime, because we tend to think of those who have gone ahead of us not being interested in earthly things as much anymore. But quite a few of them want to make sure their bodies are found, if possible, want to try to make sure that the murderer is caught. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, it's very true that they go to great lengths to get their information through, especially Bob Chappell, the gentleman you're talking about with the yacht. At the moment, yes, there's been new leads with that case, and I did identify it. So I went under hypnosis on two occasions for that case, and at the time no one believed me that I saw there was three suspects and they entered the yacht, yet his poor partner was jailed for his murder and his body's never been found. And now they've found those three people, and there's actually big stories going on in Australia here at the moment about that case. And those three people and the identikits that I did in the book from the hypnosis session, they do exist. And one of them's been interviewed.
So have they confessed to the crime, or are we just confident we have the right people?
One of them, there's a young female, she admits to being on the yacht at the time and admits about the other people there, but it's still an ongoing case.
His significant other is still in jail for this crime. When did the crime take place?
It took place in 2009.
Yeah, I thought it was relatively recent, but that's terrible that she's still in jail for it. Just briefly, everyone, this is a fellow who was working on this large, nice yacht, sort of trying to get it ready to go out to sea. It was at night, and people apparently thought he wasn't there. And when they found him, they seemed to have murdered him and thrown his body somewhere that no one's ever found it. And so his poor significant other virtually wife, was jailed for his murder. And there really was no evidence, it seems to me, that it was especially her. There was evidence against it.
Yes, definitely. There's been a number of appeals, and at the moment they're announcing there's a big program here on the Sunday night show, and they're actually announcing new evidence. So hopefully we can finally see the right person being put away and Sue being let out of jail after all these years.
So you're saying that you had seen their faces, and you had done, you said identikits or whatever with the police to help them have an actual picture of them, and they were recognizable from those pictures?
Yes, that's right. Well, the identikits I did with, I've been working with a retired officer on the case, but when there's some software that's called FlashFace, which you can use, and you can actually do reasonable identikits. Because I'm not law enforcement over here, I can't get access to the proper identikit software. It's, it's only available for police officers.
Yes.
Yeah, you can do some really quite good images of what they look like, and they do match the people.
Fascinating. But there are some, though, I've noticed, who don't know who killed them because they didn't see the murderers. But this fellow didn't see the murderers, right? Or did he see them?
Yeah, well, I think he did. He didn't see them initially because he was working on the yacht. He was downstairs. But then he saw them when they attacked him. So he does look as though he knew these people. They were hanging around the yacht club at the time of his murder. And I think too, sometimes once they are passed, then they still get to see things of how things, you know, progress. And even his body was dumped either wrapped in a sail or in a sail bag, he was very well aware of everything they were doing, because the way they show me, it's as though they're hovering above their own body or the crime scene and watching what's going on.
It's typical when people are going to die from some traumatic event that they will be outside their bodies, from a car accident or a murder. And so if he was with it enough, then he would, it seems to me, have been able to see and recognize the people that were doing this. So this all fits together. That's what I love about doing this work, because all the information is consistent. That all makes perfect sense. What was your favorite of all these that you did, the most satisfying? Which one? Do you have a favorite?
I think working on the Murphy's Creek murders and actually getting the messages for the young ladies there, although that the perpetrators, nobody's ever been charged, and at least four of them are now dead. That's been a really hard thing. But just giving their messages to their family has been wonderful.
Yes. Yeah, it seems to me that being able to give closure to parents, they're not alive, they have gone on, but they're perfectly happy, and here's their message. What a beautiful thing to be able to do for people who don't know what happened to their children.
I think it is important for people to know that their love lives on, and even though, you know, they've gone through these traumatic experiences, sometimes the people who are deceased, they don't really want you to focus on that. They want you to keep living. A lot of the time when they die, you know, the family members, part of them dies, and a lot of the time their life is shattered completely because of the loss.
Yes.
And it's hard to live on.
Yes. Yeah, no, that can be heartbreaking to see people go through that. So it seems to me, if I were doing your work, I would find being able just to tell them, well, he's dead or she's dead, but they're fine and here they are. That strikes me as a wonderful thing to be able to do with your whole life, to be able to do that for people. One of the things that was interesting to me was that you told immediately that whether they were alive or dead, if you tuned into someone, and because you immediately say, well, he or she was dead. How do you know that?
Because when I do tune in, they actually appear to me in the room and I can see them. So I see them, hear them, feel them. So they'll be walking around in the room I'm doing the reading with, or if I'm at the police station or at the crime scene, I'll see them. And that's how I kind of determine that. But I was asked to work on a case the other day, and this gentleman's been missing for quite some time. And initially I could see little bits and pieces, but I didn't really know whether he was dead or alive at that initial point. But then when I went to bed that night, I actually started to dream about him, and he's been very strong, and he's now showing me that he was shot, and, you know, I can see all the pieces of the puzzle, and I kind of feel this work is like working with a jigsaw, and some bits make sense, some things are from the past, some are from the future, some are from the present. So it's trying to put it all together and, you know, make a cohesive whole to give to the families or the police.
Have you ever had it happen that you tried to tune in on someone and you thought they were alive? Have you had that kind of experience?
Yes, I have had experiences like that. I find sometimes when someone's missing and they have mental illness, it's very hard to tune into them because, you know, sometimes they may have used substances, or they may be on medication. And so it's almost like you're seeing a distorted view of the reality that they're going through. So that can be difficult. But when I do tune in, I can see, you know, the energy is different when I tune into someone who is alive, but I can see past, present, future about them as well. But it's just that a dead person's energy is a lot heavier, or I suppose a lot coarser. So it's sort of just understanding that. But when I tune in, I hear them. So I hear only in my right ear. I had a diving accident many years ago, so I've got tinnitus in that ear. So I hear them there. I see them, and I see like little video screens when I'm tuning in. I might see symbols floating past. Someone's got, say, a gold fake tooth or something. The tooth might float past. Yeah, I see quite weird stuff.
That's fascinating. All right. Well, so if someone was maybe hadn't completed a transition, have you ever suspected that the person was actually earthbound? Would their energy be different too?
Yes, their energy is quite sad. And a lot of the time you'll feel that feeling, you know, sometimes suicides can come through that way. But it's interesting, not all suicides do. Sometimes they feel that they're free of their earthly body and they're not sort of stuck with that depression or sadness that they felt when they were alive. So sometimes they feel more uplifted. So, yeah, it is. It's an interesting way that they come through. And I think each case or each time I tune in to somebody, it's different as well.
Fascinating. And now you had one of the cases that's in your book is about a very young man. I think he was 27 who was killed in not really an accident. Someone was burning down his store and the young man was killed in that fire. And one of the things you said was that this was truly an accident, that this was not a planned exit. He hadn't been able to complete his mission here, that's one of the questions I get from people. Are all deaths planned? And they tell us, the dead tell us most deaths are planned, but there are some that are not. Have you found that a lot of these were planned, or do you have any sense of what percentage of these people who have died violently, the deaths were just accidental?
Yeah, I think in Chris's case, when we look back now, because I still have contact with his mom, he did fit a lot of things into his life, and I don't think people realise that until you lose someone. You kind of see that they did achieve a lot, but really, yeah, he shouldn't. I don't feel he should have passed at that time. It was just the guy in the convenience store downstairs. He actually bombed his convenience store to claim the insurance, and when he did that, Chris's apartment was above. There were people killed in that, and his two flatmates got out, but with the extent of the explosion, it warped the doors and he couldn't get out. But even as he was dying, he sent his mother a text message telling her that he loved her, just as he was perishing.
Yeah, and then repeatedly he gave her signs. P.S. I love you. There's a movie, I guess, by that name. That was kind of a lovely, tender story between the mother and the son. This was a case, of course, where we didn't have to go find the body. We knew where he was, but giving the family closure about the fact that he was fine and at peace was important. So you think that he completed a lot in his life, but probably that still was not an exit point that was planned.
Yeah, I don't think it was at all. And the other interesting thing with that poor gentleman, one of his school friends, she was murdered a couple of days before her wedding, only I think it was 2 years ago now. And when I actually tuned into him, she appeared as well, because the thing that they had with her was they tied yellow ribbons around all the trees as her remembrance, because she was a school teacher. And I kept seeing yellow ribbons and I didn't even know they knew each other. And their mum, his beautiful mum Elizabeth, said to me, oh, yeah, that's to do with Stephanie, who was murdered as well. So they actually appeared together.
So they've reunited there, and they're talking to their families then and giving them reassurance together. This strikes me as what many people would think of as a sad job, but yet reading it, I see you seem to be really dedicated to the people involved and doing what you can to help them. It's really a very much a helping profession.
Yes, I think so. It is hard when you're working with them, and especially when somebody's coming to find information about their loved one and you see they've passed away and that person doesn't want to know that or doesn't believe that. That's hard. But then I can see the difference in people when I tune in. When they might walk into the room, you can see their sadness and the heavy energy around them. But when they leave, even though they know that their loved one's deceased, it's almost like everything's lifted and they find there's a reason to live on. And I think that's the thing. And to know that their loved one's with them is, you know, and even with me, I'm a big skeptic. I never really chose to do this. And some of the information that comes through, but there's obscure things that I would never know. And you tell them that and they kind of go, how do you know that? You must be making contact. And I said, that's because they're telling me. It's kind of strange. Really.
One of the things that I find interesting is people wonder, when you graduate, when you have truly passed, do you know a lot more then than you know now? And one of the things that I find interesting is people, and again, looking at the Shane Barker case, he didn't know who killed him, and he still doesn't know who killed him. It's not something he learned when he got there. Is that a usual thing, that people don't find out when they get there what actually happened?
Yeah, sometimes I think through the trauma of it, they don't always get to see We have suspicions of who did it. At the time, he was actually shot, and it was night, and it was raining. But the person had camouflage gear on, and not a balaclava, but kind of like a hunter sort of type hat. So yeah, it was very difficult for him to see. I think it was more the shock of, you know, he was a shooter himself. That was something that he used to do. But I think for him to be just found dead in his home was quite a shock for him. And it was being more about him trying to get back to his family and let them know he was okay.
Yes. But, I mean, I would like to know that myself, that we get to find out things we didn't know in life. Maybe not necessarily that, but other things. But have you ever found a case where someone feels that they learned after their death what had happened surrounding their death? Does that ever come up?
Yes, especially with there was a little girl in the book called Kyesha Abrahams, and it's a very tragic story. Her mother and her stepfather actually murdered her.
Yeah, I saw that.
The information that came through from Kyesha afterwards and knowing about things, and but still, she's still very childlike. She's only 6 when she was murdered, but, you know, I get messages from her of little butterflies because that was something that she loved, in the colour purple. And even after she passed, when I was working on her case, one evening I'd met her, some of her other family who were not involved. And when I did the reading, I went home and I tuned into her like a little hat she had. When I went to bed, I felt a little child crawling to bed with me and cuddle up to me.
Oh, my.
My children aren't that little anymore, but it made me think about when my daughter used to do that. But it was all this little girl wanted to be was loved. And, you know, it was so lovely that I felt that I could give her that kind of feeling back.
Do you work outside Australia at all, or are you only in Australia when you do this work?
I've worked in New Zealand. I've worked on a TV show called Sensing Murder, so I've done some in Australia, predominantly Australia. I do work with a group. I've only just rejoined again because I was doing a lot before I was writing the book. There's a beautiful group over there called Find Me in America, and they have retired law enforcement over there, and they work on unsolved crimes with psychics all around the world. So we will all tune in. We'll all be given a case.
Oh, wow.
Kelly Snyder is the guy, and he is just incredible what he does. And they've solved so many cases over there in America. But they, you know, they also they'll work with cases. They worked on one over here that I've worked on. They're just incredible people. Like all of the work that I do in Australia and Find Me as well is all done pro bono. So it's all a matter of helping people and utilizing our gifts to make a difference. So it's important work.
Wow, that's wonderful that you're doing it. You're not even asking for a payment. My goodness, that's amazing. What about doing readings? Do you do readings for people in a conventional sense, psychic, or you do? Is that more of a business then?
Yeah, it is. I do that full time, and then and I charge for readings. But then when it comes to doing the police work, I do all of that pro bono, and. And I also teach. I teach people how to tune in and do the psychometry, you know, and through people learning to do psychometry, a lot of the time the mediumship abilities will actually open up as well. So it's interesting to help other people. And there's so many people who are awakening at the moment who are finding, you know, they might hear things or sense things or feel things, but they don't know what to do with it, or they might have nightmares and dreams about things, and they may come to me to seek help of how to understand that and how to work with it and sort of utilize it in a positive sense so that they're not frightened anymore.
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing. So you give classes in this then, is that what you say? There, of course, it would not be on the internet. It would be there that you give the classes, or do you give them on the internet too?
No, I haven't started to. I have thought about doing them on the internet and doing them through YouTube, which I think would be good. Usually it's more in person. Like I'll have groups that'll come and, you know, that will meet up.
Do you get the sense that there's more interest in this area in Australia? Because certainly there's a disproportionate amount of interest in Australia, it seems to me, given that your population is so much less than it is in the U.S. I don't know whether that's just because I know the Zammits and I know they're very, very heavily involved, or is that really the case? Do you get the sense there are people are more interested in what happens at and after death?
Um, I, Yeah, I suppose. I think it's becoming more acceptable here now. When I first started to do this kind of work, it was not something you would kind of talk about. And people didn't really go and have readings and thing, or people had readings, but not in the same sense as what we do now. A lot of people would go and have tarot card readings and that kind of thing. But now there's more of the mediumship. I think the television program Medium actually opened people up to understand even what a medium was.
Right.
There's been a number of shows over here, like The One. I appeared on The One, and then Sensing Murder opened that up quite a lot. But I find there's a lot of interest. England is hugely
yes.
involved. And I do feel the States, I have a lot of contacts from people from the States and do readings for a lot of people over there as well through Skype or phone readings. But I suppose with Australia, I actually feel we're a bit behind, especially when it comes to the psychic detective work, because the police aren't so open here. Like, police will say off on record they don't work with psychics, but off record they do work with us. You know,
that's what's happening in the US too, and I find it interesting. If they find someone who can really do this work, they still won't admit that that's what they're doing, but they're always calling the person up and saying, hey, got another one for you. I think that's an intermediate stage. I think it's going to become well known that there are people who can do this work and that it's immensely helpful. So, but you work sometimes for the families as well, right? Not just for the police.
Yes, I do work with the families. I just find sometimes it's a bit hard emotionally. People can get quite upset with you, or they can get the other way. They can be obsessed with you, and they want you to make contact with their child 24/7 kind of thing.
Yes,
and that's,
yes.
You know, and that's very hard for them as well. I understand how they would feel, but sometimes it's not good for them or for the person in spirit. You know, you need to have a bit of time.
You know, nor is it good for you. No, that's a bit much. It's her book is fascinating. It is called Clues from Beyond, and it's not your first book, Debbie, right? What other books have you written?
My first book was called Never Alone, A Medium's Journey, and that was about how I became a psychic medium and the near-death experiences, and then how I came to work on the police cases. And then I've written a book called Awaken Your Psychic Abilities, and it's teaching people how to enhance their gifts. We're all born psychic in one way, shape or form, but some of us are better at it than others, so it's a matter of tuning in and following our gut feelings and, you know, understanding those little messages we get from the other side that tell us that our loved ones are still around.
Now, I didn't realize that you were giving readings, but I think it would be good if you told people. Do you give readings in the U.S. too, right?
Yes, I do. I do them via phone or Skype.
One thing everyone needs to know is it doesn't matter how far away the medium is, because where our dead loved ones are, there is no such thing as space or distance. So your loved one can be easily with a medium who's all the way down under and with you in the United States or wherever you are. So don't hesitate to think about using a medium who lives far away. In fact, I've had mediums tell me that it's actually easier if they're not in the same room with the person that they're trying to contact the loved ones of, because they're distracted when they look at you. So do you have a backlog of people? Is there a waiting list for people to work with you?
Oh, it's not so bad. It's a couple of weeks, because I do readings full time. So, and I've just opened my books again, because I'd sort of closed everything off with writing the book, and now I've sort of got some free time again, which is wonderful. I can get back to doing what I love most, and that's, you know, helping people.
Are you expensive?
I'm $260 Australian for a reading.
You know what that is in the US?
Oh, no.
I think it's less here. But
oh, it's less, because our dollar's about 75 cents to your value to your $1 at the moment.
So it's probably less than 200. So you're very inexpensive. That's terrific. Nowadays, there's really quite a lot more than that most people charge. So that's good. I'm surprised you only have a 2-week backlog. I have to tell you, just parenthetically, and tell everyone, it's becoming very difficult to find a really good medium who can even see you within 2 years. I've been astonished to see how rapidly that has happened. And as you say, there seems to be a lot more interest, and that's certainly part of the evidence of that fact. But that's exciting. I'd like to have your information to put on my website, because people are looking all the time, and they'll call these people. And oddly enough, the ones who seem to be the best and have time are in Australia, which I think is fascinating.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that's wonderful.
So what's your website, Debbie?
So my website is www.betweentwoworlds.net. So the two spelled out, so it's T-W-O-worlds.net.
Okay, that's it. All one word, betweentwoworlds.net. That's two is spelled out. So that's great. And what would you like people to know? I mean, I think what I would like people to know is you can get closure. You can find out what happened to people, or you can make the world make sense through people like Debbie, who can talk to, can pick up information about your dead loved one, even if you may not feel that you are going to be able ever to communicate with them. It's very reassuring reading these stories and seeing people have this kind of closure. So what would you suggest to people for advice if they're in a terrible situation and they wish they could get closure on what happened to someone?
I think it's good to seek out, to have a reading, and then you actually it's not always about the loss of someone either. It's sometimes people want business guidance or, just sort of spiritual guidance and finding out about what their path is in life. It's also their loved ones will bring through positive messages about, about the things that they can change in their life and how to look at the good things, because a lot of the time we look at very negative things at the moment. When you look at the world, there's so many negative news and,
yes,
terrorist attacks, but they're things we can't worry about, because worrying about them, it's not going to make it go away. So I think it's about focusing on the positives and, just taking time out and reconnecting with yourself. And through doing that, you can actually connect with your loved ones. And the signs that they give you is a wonderful thing. Like we have a bird over here called a magpie, and my father-in-law passed away 5 years ago. And the messages that he comes back through with these magpies are incredible.
really?
They appear like, and I find loved ones have that, as like other people with readings. They might, every time they find a feather, that's a sign their loved one is nearby. Or, Pop might have used to giving you a coin or giving you money when you were little, and people will find change around the house, and that's a sign like pennies from heaven. So they will come through in different ways, and sometimes music is another way they will come through to, let you know they're there. It might be their favourite song comes on the radio, or you can even get it through fragrances like somebody's perfume or hairspray or boot polish might be a smell that reminds you of that person. And people will say to me, I keep smelling this smell, it reminds me of my mum. And then I'll tell them what the smell is, and I'll go, yeah, my mum used to wear that. And I said, well, actually, she's there. So I think it's finding things out that way,
So the kinds of readings you do can be connecting with dead loved ones, can be maybe picking up on past, present, and future, as you said.
Yes.
Psychic readings. Wow. Okay. That's great. That's very good to know. And so you can be contacted through betweentwoworlds.net.
That's right.
Well, I thank you for telling us more about psychic detective work. I'm fascinated by this, and I learned something from your book. I don't often learn stuff anymore when I pick up books, because I've been doing this for 50 years, but I did learn quite a bit from yours about this whole different area. And it is tragic, these things that sometimes happen to people, but still the way to surmount them, to overcome them, is to face them, get past them, and grow from whatever the experience was. Remember, this is all illusion. Nobody ever dies. And when you know that, it's a little easier to face whatever might come in your life. So thank you so much for being with us, Debbie. I've really enjoyed talking with you. And I hope you have a wonderful day in Australia, where the world has just begun.
Thank you so much, Roberta. I really appreciate you having me on. It was wonderful to speak with you today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And again, her book is called Clues from Beyond, and I found it fascinating. Actually, I try to skim books, but sometimes I'm reading something I can't skim. This one I didn't want to skim. It was very, very enlightening and fascinating. So as you know, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes, and I'm very glad you could be with us today. Please never forget for a moment, no matter what's going on in your life, that you are a powerful, eternal being that never changes. You never began, you never will end, and that's true of everyone you love. And when you really, really get what that means, I mean, to the core of your being, and you can get what that means if you work at it. What I learned the day I came to understand it was all really true was that Frankly, there was nothing to be afraid of. Life is the most glorious experience, partly because it's so temporary, and we get to go home to real life. It's even more wonderful. Next week, our guest is going to be David Lowe, and he was last with us to talk about his website, which is worldspirituality.com, and we talked off air. I discovered he had another kind of expertise that I wanted to be able to find an expert on, and that is dream interpretation, because I get a lot of questions from people who wonder about dreams, and I'm clueless, and I'm as psychic as a post, so when we talked about it and I came to understand he had some real expertise in this area, I asked him to come back and talk about that. So next week, dream interpretation and even how to ask for the right dreams so you can learn from them. Dreams come from your subconscious, which is really your superconscious, which is really the part of your mind that you left behind in what we now think of as the afterlife, but it's really real life. I'm going to be learning right along with you, so please join us next week. And of course, today we've been visiting with Debbie Malone of Sydney, Australia. What a delightful person she is. She's a psychic detective, and she's a very gifted medium. It was Wendy Zammit who said you really have to talk to her, and she's very, very good, very bright, and also as a psychic. So I think we'll put her information on my website. Her book is Clues from the Beyond. It's not very long. It's, you know, I like books that are short, so you don't have to marry them. You just sort of date them. And it's full of stories which really touched me and made me understand that you really, in all situations, can have closure and can move on and understand your loved ones still are fine. My own nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, and The Fun of Living Together. You can get them through bookstores or on Amazon.com. They're available as audiobooks and in 34 languages, believe it or not, worldwide. If you want to talk about any of my books, if you want to contact me for any reason at all, just go to robertagrimes.com. Please read my blog, too. I enjoy doing the blog whenever I get to. Not as much anymore because I'm so busy, but I try to do it as much as I can. So contact me through the website. I always answer emails. It can take a day or two, so please be patient, but I do answer emails. Just make sure you always give me your correct email address so I can get back to you because I'll write you a long response. Of course, past episodes of Seek Reality are available on webtalkradio.net, on iTunes, and through the Seek Reality app that you can find for free in the iTunes store. Dream Vision 7 Radio is broadcasting year-old episodes. I love those people. And you can always, always, of course, find me here. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely, infinitely loved.